As mentioned before we begin the shiur this evening, next Wednesday evening, Rabbi Wein very kindly offered to host an evening in his shul, Beit Knesset Hanasi, for the Sefer in English on Agoda, Sages, Stories and Secrets. That will be at 8 o'clock. If you don't have one already, all are welcome there. Beit Knesset Hanasi, 8 o'clock, Wednesday the 27th of January. In the meanwhile, to matters at hand. The Parsha of B'Shalach has been a Yisrael as they're journeying from Mitzrayim. And as we will see, Mitz Hashem, we ourselves will be going on a bit of a journey this evening of discovery with regards to the epic event of Kriyas Yamsuf. Let's begin, and we'll note a number of questions. We begin by referring to a pasuk that we mention in Shiras Hayam, so that's a daily reference for us, in Perek Tesvav, pasuk Dalet. Markavos Paro v'chelo yorav hayam, the chariots of Paro and his army he threw into the sea. And the choice of his officers drowned in the Yamsuf. The first thing we note, which in a sense is an ongoing theme in Shiras Hayam, and indeed in many Shiros, is that we essentially seem to have a double reference here. The same idea said in slightly different ways, doubled over. But what's especially interesting here is that the sea is only referred to by its name in the second half of the pasuk. That is to say, Markavos Paro v'chelo yorav hayam, Paro's army and host, were thrown into the sea. Umivcha shalishav tubu v'yamsuf, and the choice of his officers in the Red Sea, or the Reed Sea, the Yamsuf. That already is a bit unusual, because normally we are more inclined to define our terms at the outset, and then refer to them more generally later on. What is the Yam in the first phrase of the Pasuk? Well, it's the Yamsuf. Why isn't it called the Yamsuf? Because what else is there? It's the Yamsuf. And yet, in the second phrase, it is referred to explicitly as the Yamsuf. Why would that be? That's an interesting shaila. That's an Oz Yoshir question. Okay. Another interesting shaila that is raised with regard to Kriyas Yamsuf generally, and the drowning of the Mitzrayim, is that it seems to represent a lack of order, reversal of the order, in the way that these events were forecast much earlier on. As we know, all of this has been foretold to Avram Avinu in the Bris Ben HaBesarim. He was told first of Va'avodim Ve'inu Osam Arba Me'o Shana. And then the Pasuk says, Ve'gamis HaGoya She'avodu Don Anochi, the nation that they work for will be punished. And subsequent to that, they will leave with Rechush Gadol. The order would seem to imply that the first thing will happen is that the Egyptians are punished, and then after that, we'll leave with Rechush Gadol. Now, the punishment of the Egyptians really has two phases to it. Firstly, you have the year of the plagues, the Eser Makos. And then, after we've left, on the seventh day of Pesach, you have the final installment, which is Kriyas Yamsuf and the drowning of the Mitzrayim. In the interim, however, we have left Mitzrayim with gold and silver. And therefore, it seems that we were experiencing and fulfilling the Acharei Chen Yetzu B'Rechush Gadol before Don Anochi had concluded. So what are we to make of that? That in fact Rechush Gadol seems to have come before Dan Anochi happened in its entirety. We should note, for the sake of full disclosure, that this question is assuming that the gold and silver that we took from Mitzrayim was indeed the Rechush Gadol that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was talking about. Not all opinions are in agreement with regards to that question. The Vilna Gaon, in his Perush to Shir HaShirim, and others as well, are of the opinion that the Rechush Gadol that was foretold was not the gold and silver that we left Mitzrayim with, but rather the gold and silver that we collected at the banks of the Red Sea after the Egyptians had drowned. After all, Rashi told us, and we referred to this last week, that all of the gold and silver and jewels that were taken to the Red Sea, that they decorated their chariots with, etc., was greater in value than the gold and silver that we took from Mitzrayim. Gedol lahaisa bizas hayam, the treasure by the Yamsuf, was greater than bizas Mitzrayim. And therefore, the Vilna Gaon is of the opinion that it was actually that gold and silver on the seventh day of Pesach that was the Rechush Gadol. According to that approach, indeed the order has been preserved, because Dan Anochi was concluded with the drowning of the Mitzrayim, and subsequent to that, we had the treasure from the Yamsuf, which is Achrecheni to Rechush Gadol. However, the question remains open for those, and there are those who understand, that the gold and silver that we took from Mitzrayim was the Rechush Gadol, in which case the question returns. We seem to have had Rechush Gadol before Dan Anochi at least concluded. Okay, that's an interesting shaila. Further, it's interesting to note that we refer to Kriyas Yamsuf both in the morning and in the evening, in the bracha after Shema, in Emes V'yatziv in the morning, Emes V'emunah in the evening. And in both cases, we seem to refer to the drowning of the Mitzrim in a dual fashion. In the morning, if we note, we begin with Mimitzrayim Galtanu, Beis Avidim Nisanu, Kabuchem Ma'akdav Chulkav Chulkav Ata, V'zeidim Tibata, Zaydim, the wanton ones, that's Mitzrayim. Tibata, you drowned. Vididim Hevarta. And then we quote the Pasuk from Tehillim, Vayichasu Mayim Tzareihem, and the water covered over their oppressors, Echad Me'ab Lonosar, no one was left. So we have actually referred twice to the drowning of the Egyptians. Number one, with the phrase of Zaydim Tibata, which pretty much seems to say, and then Vayichasu Mayim Tzareihem, and the water covered over them, which is really how people count. And we refer to it again. This is assuming that the first phrase Vezedim Tibata is about them drowning in the water of the Yamsuf, which many say that it is. Why do we refer to them drowning twice? A parallel double reference can be seen in the Bracha after Shema in the evening, Emes Ve'emunah, because we say Ma'ar Ribbono begins the Yamsuf Es Rod Fehem Ve'es Son Ehem Bishomos Tiba. Their pursuers and their enemies he drowned in the depths. Who are our pursuers? Mitzrayim. Who are our enemies? Mitzrayim. But why are they referred to as two separate groups? Or in two separate ways, when they are essentially one and the same? Okay, that's a Siddur question. Let's return now to the Parsha. In Perek Yud Daled, as we see Paro gets ready for the chase, we also see what seems to be a repetition of certain elements. We find Perek Yud Daled, Pasuk Vav, Paro gets ready, Vayosoris Rechbo, he himself gets his own chariot, Ve'esamola Kachimo, and he takes his nation with him, and off they go. Pasukes, Vayechazek Hashem, Eslei Paro Melech Mitzrayim, Vayirdov Acharei B'nei Yisrael, and pursues B'nei Yisrael. So they're off. Next Pasuk Tes, Vayirdefu Mitzrayim Acharei Hem. Mitzrayim pursued after them. But that's in Pasuk Ches, he took his nation and off they went. So why does Paro pursue the Jewish people twice? I mean, it's between one pasuk and another. It hardly warrants a recap, even though it's actually Sheni in between. I'm not sure how long the Mishnah Berurah could be. Perhaps it really does require. But they go and then they go. Okay. And where, when the Egyptians pursue the Jewish people, where do they find them? Pasuk Tes vayudefu Mitzrayim achareim vayosigu osam chonim alayam. Okay. Kosus rechav Paro parshav chelo. Al Pihachiros. Al meaning by, next to, adjacent to a place called Pihachiros. Okay, now we know. The only problem is the Jewish people were told earlier on in Pasuk Beis to backtrack. And if we have a look there, we'll see that they were told to go to a place which is not exactly where they were found. Daber b'nei Yisrael, speak to b'nei Yisrael, Yoshuvu, let them go back, V'yachanu, and encamp, Lifni Pihachiros, before Pihachiros, which denotes some distance from Pihachiros. How long? Don't know, but it's not the same as Al Pihachiros. So the question is, if they were told to go back and return to Lifnei Pihachiros, how come when the Egyptians chased after them, they found them Al Pihachiros? Okay, that's a detailed question. And now, let's take a look at Pasuk Yud. So Pharaoh, Hikri of Paro, advances further. Vayis'u b'nei Yisrael esei nehem. The Jewish people lift up their eyes, which is sometimes a good idea in the Chumash. Not always, you never know what you'll see. Well, v'hinei Mitzrayim nosei achareim. And Mitzrayim is chasing after them, and they just panic. Vayir'u ma'od, vayitz'aku b'nei Yisrael el Hashem, and they're crying out, and then they complain to Moshe, and they're just they're completely traumatized by this. But there's room to ask a very simple question. This is part of the plan. The plan was to draw the Egyptians out, as was told to Moshe earlier on in Pasuk Dalet, Hashem says, V'chizakti eslev Paro, V'radaf achareim, I'll harden Paro's heart, he'll chase after them, you'll see, then I'll be glorified, V'yikovda b'far v'chol chelo, I'll be glorified through Pharaoh and his army, V'yodu Mitzrayim ki yinei Hashem. That's the plan. The plan is to bring the Egyptians out. In which case, they shouldn't really be surprised if they see them, because that's what this is meant to be for. So really the question is, Hashem told Moshe that's the plan, that's the goal. Did Moshe tell the Jewish people that's the goal? We're going back, we're backtracking to draw the Egyptians out. Did he tell them or not? That's an interesting shaila. Actually, both possibilities will lead us to difficulties. If he didn't tell them, as if to say he just told them where to go but didn't tell them why, which is why they were surprised, so let us ask, why wouldn't he tell them? As if to say, why would the Jewish people even agree if Moshe says we're going back to Mitzrayim and not explain why? Why not tell them? Spare them the shock of seeing Mitzrayim coming after them. Unless we say that they were told that this would bring the Egyptians out, in which case we come back to our first question, so why the shock when they see them? That's the plan. Okay, a little bit further into this perek, in Pasuk Yutes and Kaf, we'll encounter an interesting question. For as the Egyptians are chasing after B'nai Yisrael, so there's a bit of a barrier that's put between them. Pasuk Yutes, Vayisa malach ha'lokim ha'olech lifnei machanei Yisrael, vayelech me'achareihem. The Hashem's malach, who normally traveled before Yisrael, traveled behind them, placing himself between them and their pursuers. And then the cloud also went from before them to behind them, so there's a barrier between them. All of this came, the cloud and the malach came between the two. Vayi anon vachoshech, there was cloud on the part of the Egyptians, vayaris halayla, and light for Bnei Yisrael. And now the pasuk says, velo korav ze el ze kol halayla. And therefore they did not get close to each other the whole night because there was a cloud in the way. And here, we ask a simple shaila. If you have a phrase like korav ze el ze, the implication is one of a mutual desire yet to get closer together. But they weren't able to. Lo korav ze el ze, they weren't able to get near to each other. Which is a very interesting way to phrase this. Because of the two groups, it's safe to say, only one of them was really interested in getting close to the other one. The other one was quite happy to stay far away from the first one. So that's hardly ze el ze. That doesn't sound like a reciprocal desire to get together. It's a very one-sided get together. So how can that be called lo korav ze el ze? Indeed, we may be aware, there's an interesting comment of the Gemara in Maseches Megillah and Daf Yud, that the Malachim wanted to say a Shira at that time. They felt that was a good time to say Shira. And Hashem said no. It's a very interesting Gemara. In his words, Ma'aseh Yodai Tovim Bayam, my creations are drowning in the sea, not appropriate to say Shira. It's got to be done, and maybe when it's all finished, the Jewish people will say Shira, but not now. Where do we see in the Pasuk that an allusion to the fact that the Malachim wanted to say Shira? Well, it's actually based on these words, V'lo korav ze el ze kol halayla, because the words korav ze el ze are much more familiar to us from the Navi Yishaya as the prelude to the Shira of the Malachim, which begins V'korav ze el ze v'amar. And therefore the Shira always begins with V'korav ze el ze. On this night when there was no Shira of the Malachim, so lo korav ze el ze kol halayla. Okay. That's an interesting drasha, but we can appreciate why the drasha said this, because on a pshat level, these words are actually quite difficult for the reason that we said, that Karav Ze El Ze, the two groups, Mitzrayim and the Jewish people, didn't want to get together. And therefore, the Pasuk says Darsheni, hence the Gemara. But we will perhaps try and understand these words al derech hapshat. And now, let's come to what is perhaps the most difficult of the psukim here, the pasuk that describes the splitting of the Yam Suf itself, which is in pasuk Kaf Aleph. So the pasuk reads, Vayed Moshe es yado al hayam, Moshe stretches his hand out over the sea, Vayolech Hashem es hayam beruach kadimazal kol halayla, and Hashem moves the sea with an easterly wind, a strong easterly wind the whole night, Vayasim esayom lechavara and lecharava, and turns the sea or the seabed into dry land, Vayibaku hamayim, and the water split. That's the pasuk of the split. And there's a number of rather difficult questions with regards to this pasuk. Firstly, the order of the split seems to be reversed, because first the pasuk says, if we translate, Vayasim esayom lecharava, that Hashem turned the seabed into dry land, and then the next thing that happened was Vayibaku Hamayim, the water split. Well, presumably the order is the other way around. First the water split, exposing the seabed, and then the seabed was dried. So it should have said Vayibaku Hamayim and then Vayasim Esayam Lecharava. So that's out of order. That's number one. Secondly, if we may ask, tentatively, the agency through which the split occurs is referred to in the pasuk as Ruach Kadim Azah Kol Halayla, a strong easterly wind. What's interesting is, it's difficult to know exactly how the wind would create a split in the sea. It would have to be some type of targeted wind. But one thing's for sure, once you give it a direction, so then the result will not be an internal split, but rather moving something in the other direction. An easterly wind blows things westwards. It doesn't create a split in the thing that it's blowing. So how is the strong easterly wind the force with which the waters part? Further, the pasuk says, same pasuk, earlier on, Vayolech Hashem es hayam. What did Hashem do with this easterly wind? Vayolech. Now the word leholich, strictly, Vayolech from leholich, strictly speaking, means to transport. Because laleches is to go, and leholich is to transport, to move something from one place to another. Every other usage of the word leholich in Tanakh means that. Except, that's not what happened here. Doesn't seem appropriate. Hashem didn't transport anything. He didn't move anything from A to B. There is no A to B. There's only A. And he created a slit within A. But moving within something is not called transporting. It's just called creating a split. So why is the word vayolech used? Further, the pasuk ends, still pasuk kaf aleph, vayosem, on that phrase, vayosem esayom lecharava, which we translate as, and he turned the sea, or the seabed, into dry land. The word lasim also, perhaps, doesn't seem to be the best choice of word, because lasim is to place. Again, it's about location. It's placing something somewhere. That doesn't seem to be the best verb to use for drying something up. It could have said, Vayehafeich es hayom lecharava. He turned the sea into dry land. Or perhaps even more briefly, Vayecharev hayom. And the sea was dried up. So why does it use the word Vayosem? So as we can see, Pasuk Kaf Aleph will need a good deal of understanding. It's the pasuk where the split happens, and nothing seems to be the intuitive choice of word for what we're talking about. Okay. Now, there's two psukim. Just another one or two questions, and we'll be out of the woods. So, there are two psukim which seem to be very similar to each other. Pasuk Kaf Beis, Vayavo Bnei Yisrael, Besochayam Be'abasha, they went through the sea on dry land. Maim lem choma, minam umismolam. Okay, that's the well-known pasuk. Let's have a look at pasuk kaftes. So pasuk kaftes reads, Uvnei Yisrael halchu beyavasha besochayam, v'maim lem choma, miminam umismolam. Almost an exact repetition. But not completely. For if we look carefully, we will see in the earlier pasuk Kaf Beis, it says Vayavo ben Yisrael besochayam bayabasha, in the sea on dry land, which they were, because they were in the sea but on dry land. The second pasuk Kaf Tes says Uvnei Yisrael hachalchu bayabasha besochayam, on dry land in the sea. Now both are true because there was a patch of dry land in the sea. But the first post, the order of these phrases have been reversed. What is the difference between Besochayam Bayabasha and Bayabasha Besochayam? And finally, when the water comes back, it is described as coming back twice in two consecutive psukim. Because in Pasuk Kaf Zayin, we read, Vayet Moshe es yodo al hayam. Moshe stretches out his hand again. Vayashav hayam leflos boker le'esano. And then the water came back to its original form. Okay, that's that. Next, pasuk kafches vayashuv ramayim. The water came back. Well, I mean, that's what happened when the sea came back to its original form. That means the water came back. Vayichasu serecha vesaparashim. So what is the difference between vayashav hayam and Vayashuvu Hamayim? I mean, there are two ways of describing the same thing. These are some of the questions that are raised by one of the classic Mefarshim, and he will be the one that guides us here through this parsha, and that is Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi in the Sefer Maaseh Hashem. And the Maaseh Hashem, he opens up this parsha for us, and indeed, in his wake, many classic Meforshim take that theme, and each one develops it in his own way, among them the Netziv and HaMikdavar, and the Malbim, and others. And let us see how he explains. The truth is, says the Maasei Hashem, in order to answer all of the above questions, we need to know one thing. And that is, if we read through this parsha, we will note that sometimes we find a reference to Mitzrayim, who are Egyptians. Sometimes we find a reference to Chel Paro, Paro's army. And as far as we're concerned, the Egyptians are Paro's army, and Paro's army are Egyptians. It's two ways of saying the same thing. However, says Maasei Hashem, these two expressions are not two ways of saying the same thing. They actually refer to two separate groups, two separate armies. There is one army which is called Mitzrayim, and one army which is called Chel Paro. And what is the difference between them? Well, Mitzrayim referred to the general Egyptian army, made up of Egyptians generally. Chel Paro is an army within that. It's Paro's elite guard. It's his personal army. They're the ones that are with him through everything. Always on call, and they're most involved with what Paro. Everyone else, they're Egyptians, and when there's a war, they become the Egyptian army. And these two groups are different from each other, not only in makeup, but also in profile. Because Chel Paro, as we can appreciate, being closer to Paro and much more involved in Paro, all of them were deserving to be destroyed. All of them were intimately involved with the persecution of Bnei Yisrael to a terrible degree, and to a man they deserved to be wiped out. The Egyptian army, one can't really say that, as if to say, not all of them were big tzaddikim, and not all of them were big rishayim. I mean, they're the army generally. Some yes, some no. And therefore, the goal of Kriyas Yamsuf, aside from saving the Jewish people, is to drown the entirety of Paro's army and some of the Egyptian army. Those of the Egyptian army that deserve it. And what about the rest of the Egyptian army? What will happen to them? They'll be there, and they will see what happens. In fact, if we look at earlier in Pasuk Dalet of Perek Yud Dalet, V'chizaktias leparo v'radaf achrayim, V'ikovto b'faro u'v'chol chelo, I will be glorified, says Hashem, through Paro and his army, V'yod'u Mitzrayim ki an Hashem, and Mitzrayim will know that I am Hashem. We normally understand Mitzrayim who, if they're all dead, I mean, when are they going to know? Perhaps it's Mitzrayim back home when no one comes back, but no one really saw it. But the Maasei Hashem says, no, most of Mitzrayim will not be drowning in the Yamsuf. They'll be there, and they'll see it. They are Mitzrayim, V'yod'u Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. And that is what this parsha is about. That being the case, the first thing that needs to happen is to separate these two armies, for Chel Paro to detach itself from greater Egyptian army. How will that be accomplished? Well, here the Malbim guides us. In the beginning of Perek Yudalad, Pasuk Beis, Daber Bnei Yisrael, V'yoshuvu, let them go back. V'yachanu lifnei piachiros. Let them go back and encamp, wherever that is, lifnei piachiros. And Hashem says, in Pasuk Dalet, v'chizaktias leparo v'radaf achareim. I'll harden Paro's heart. He will chase after them, because he will say that they are lost. The question is, how? How will this happen? The very fact that the Jewish people have come back doesn't necessarily mean that they're lost, after all. They may have any number of reasons for traveling back. Maybe they just don't feel like traveling at the moment, and they're just coming back for a short while. That doesn't mean the Paro should chase after them. It doesn't mean they're confused yet. But there's another factor here. because it's very interesting, and it's a pasuk that we say a lot in Perek Yud Gimel, pasuk Kaf Aleph. Vashem olech lifnehem yomam b'mudan anan chosam aderech. Hashem is traveling before them, cloud by day, v'layla b'mud eish, fire by night. Laleches yomam v'layla. That's very interesting that the pasuk is telling us in the beginning that when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, they traveled day and night, which is actually quite unusual, because that sounds like they never really rested. Normally, when you travel by day, rest by night. But the pasuk says, Laleches yomam v'layla. Why would they do that? This is the beginning of the plan. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the Jewish people, and Paro is tracking them. He knows where they're going, and he hears that they're not stopping, they're not resting, not day and not night. That creates an impression. When do you move by day and not night and never rest when you're desperate to get away from the first place? That doesn't really sound like you're confident. It sounds like you're scared. You can't afford to rest. You just keep going to the point of exhaustion and beyond. If the impression is that we're scared and then we double back, that's what will chat Paro, because then he'll say we're lost. This isn't born of confidence. They have no confidence. You see, they've been traveling day and night. That's the chizuk. And that's why in Pasuk Hey of Perek Yudalad, it says, Vayugad lemelech Mitzrayim ki varacham. Paro was told that the Jewish people had run away. That's very interesting. We were told the plan is that he'll hear they doubled back and think they're lost. But actually, the pasuk says he was told they ran away. But really, you need both of them. Because he only thinks that doubling back means they're lost, because for the whole time they've been running away. And therefore, that's why he takes the fact they doubled back as a sign that they actually don't know where they're going. And if the Jewish people have no confidence in Paro's estimation, so then Paro has confidence. And his heart is hardened. As we've seen on a number of occasions, the idea of hardening Paro's heart doesn't just mean that his heart is switched off. It means he's given a situation and allowed to misinterpret it. And therefore he was given to understand that they'd run away. He's given to understand that they're double back because they're lost. That's what hardens his heart. And that's very important, because if he didn't think that they were scared, he would never go out to chase after them. But because he does think them scared, he feels he can get them back. And moreover, not only does he feel he can get them back, but the question is, how many people will he need to get them back if they're scared? For people who are scared, it only takes a few in order to commandeer them. In other words, Paro doesn't feel the need to mobilize the entire Egyptian army to bring back a bunch of scared people, however many of them there may be. And that is why Paro feels, all I need to do, I'm not going to go there by myself, but I've got people on call. Who's on call for Paro? Chael Paro. That's all he needs. As soon as they see Chael Paro, if they're scared, he'll show them the whip, and they'll come back, and it will be all done by supper time. And Paro doesn't feel that he needs more than that. And that is why in Pasuk Vav and Zion, it says, Vayeesor es richbo, Paro gets his chariot ready, ve'esamo lakachimo. He takes his people with him. Who are his people? Chael Paro. This chariot, 600 chariots, which is not a lot, 600,000 Jews and 600 chariots, it's not a lot. That's all he needs. The Chor Rechab Mitzrayim, he just needs the chariots, which is his army is in charge of them, v'shaloshim al kulo, and off he goes. V'yichazek Hashem eslev Paro melech Mitzrayim, v'yidof acharei b'nei Yisrael. Just him and his private army. But when he meets the Jewish people, he gets a shock. Because the pasuk says, Uvnei Yisrael yotzim biyad rama. Yad rama means high hand. Means in good spirits. They're confident. No one's scared. This is a bit of a difficult moment for Paro. If he knew that the Jewish people were confident, he would never have set out. At all. But he has. He's already here. So now what? He doesn't feel confident to take them on by himself, because they're actually in very high spirits. But he's not going to turn back, because Paro doesn't turn back. At this point, Paro enlists the help of the greater Egyptian army, who are then mobilized. And that is why, in Pasuk Tes, we then read, Vayirdefu Mitzrayim Achareihem. Mitzrayim then set out in pursuit after them. After whom? Says the Masi Hashem, after Chael Paro. Because Paro doesn't want to take on the Jewish people by himself. And that's why it says, Vayasigu Osam Chanim Alayam, and they caught up with them. Meaning, Mitzrayim caught up with Chael Paro. And that's why the Pasuk says, Vayasigu Osam, they caught up with them, Kol Sus Rechev Paro Ufarasha Bechelav. His horses, his cavalry, and his army. That's not; those aren't the people that caught up. Those are the people that were caught up with. They're the object. Mitzrayim caught up with Chael Paro. And that is why the location given is Al Pi Hachiros. If you remember, we mentioned before, the Jewish people were told to return to a location called Lifnei Pi Hachiros. And here we find that they were found at Al Pi Hachiros. Says Master Hashem, those are two separate places. They're close to each other. The Jewish people were Lifnei Pi Hachiros. In this Pasuk test, Al Pi Hachiros isn't where the Jewish people were, it's where Chael Paro was when the Mitzrayim caught up with them. And so, the two groups are here, and although Paro and his private army would never take on the Jewish people by himself, but with the backing of the Egyptian army, he feels confident to do it. And therefore, because his group is a distinct group and they left first, he now feels confident to proceed. And that's why in Pasuk Yud, we find Uparo Hikriv. Paro then draws further, meaning Paro with his army. And the Jewish people, they lift up their eyes and they get a surprise. Vayis'u b'nei Yisrael eseinehem, v'hine, and behold. Behold means surprise. Mitzrayim nosei achareya. The whole Egyptian army is following after them. And the Jewish people panic. And we ask the question, but they didn't know the plan? They didn't know this meant to happen? So the Ma'aseh Hashem says the Jewish people knew that they were going to be drawing out Paro and his army. That's one thing. That's a few thousand. That's one thing. Not pleasant, but manageable. No one was expecting the entire Egyptian army. That was a surprise for them. And therefore they begin to complain and they need to be calmed down. Okay. At this point, we have three groups to consider. We have the Jewish people running away. We have Paro and his army. You've pulled ahead of the greater army, which is very important. And then you have Mitzrayim behind. And what is the goal of the evening? The goal is threefold. Number one, when the Yam Suf opens, that the Jewish people should pass through and come out the other side. The second goal is that Paro's army should enter the Yam Suf and be drowned there, all of them. And the third goal is that the greater Egyptian army should not enter the Yam Suf, because most of them are not going to end up there. They need to be kept from entering the Yam Suf, as we will see. But they need to be close enough, number one, to witness what's happening, and also they need to be close enough for other reasons, as we will see. And therefore, in Pasuk, we see again, these Pasukim will now read completely differently. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Hashem says, Va'ani hineni mechazekes leiv paro, so all of Mitzrayim will follow on. But I will be glorified through the destruction of Paro and his army. And v'yodu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. Mitzrayim will be there to see it. They will know ki ani Hashem b'hikavti b'Paro b'richbo u'v'farashav. So it's important for Chael Paro to enter the Yam Suf. Important for Mitzrayim to be close, but not actually in the Yam Suf. And that's why it is of the essence to keep these two groups separate. Chel Paro to ensure that Mitzrayim never really catches up with Chel Paro. They're all steadily moving towards the Yam Suf, but they never get together. And the way that that is done is, number one, that all of the Egyptians, meaning Chel Paro and Mitzrayim, they've got to be covered in darkness, and that happens through the cloud coming behind them so that no one can see anything. And that, of course, is of the essence, because otherwise there's no way in the world that Mitzrayim would have followed them into the Yam Suf. It's interesting, in many of the depictions that we have of Kriyas Yam Suf, Mitzrayim see the Jewish people go in, and then they fancy their chance of going in after them, which is slightly delusional, because they should have known by then that if the walls of the Yam Suf are being held open miraculously, with all due respect, it's not for them. So what possessed them to chase the Jewish people? That's the point that a self-respecting tyrant calls it a day. But the Al-Derech HaPshat, they didn't see. They couldn't see where they were going. They just keep moving forward. And as long as they don't hit the sea, they're not aware they're in the sea. So that's number one. It means that everyone keeps moving forward, but they're not able to regroup. And that, says Maaseh Hashem, is why Pasuk Kaf concludes, after having described a complete darkness, with the words, V'lo korav ze el ze kol halayla. And they were not able to get together the entire night. We had a problem originally, Al-Derech HaPshat, because we understood that the ze and the ze are the Egyptians and the Israelites. They're not looking to get together. Not all of them. One yes, one no. That's not called ze el ze. Zel Zer implies that there are two groups that would like to get together, says Maaseh Hashem. There were, by this stage, Mitzrayim and Chel Paro. But they couldn't get together, they didn't know where each other were, they just keep moving forward, but they remain distinct groups. Now, now we come to the split of the Yam Suf. Well, as we know, part of the sea will make way, because there will be a path of dry land for B'nai Yisrael. The Shaila is, if we may ask, well, where's the water go? That water that used to be covering that path that people are traveling through, where does that water go? We normally understand that it just splits and piles up on either side. It might not be as simple as that. It's also true that whereas the Egyptians, the larger Egyptian army, most of them should not end up in the Yam Suf, but some of them should, right? Those of them who are particularly wicked to B'nai Yisrael should. And how will that be accomplished? And so, the answer is, we look now in Pasuk Kaf Aleph and read with new eyes. Vayet Moshe es yado al hayam. So Moshe stretches out his hand, Vayolech Hashem, and Hashem moves the sea. Vayolech means to move, to transport. He moves the sea. Esayam beruach kadem azakal alayla. And we ask the question, well, if Vayolech means to move, but where did he move the sea to? And moreover, if he does so with an easterly wind, it sounds like the sea will be moved to the west, but how does that help anyone? Except the three groups that are now by the entrance to the Yam Suf. Firstly, the Jewish people. Behind them, Chel Paro. And behind them, Mitzrayim. So the Jewish people need to pass all the way through. Mitzrayim get inside. Pardon me, Chel Paro inside. And Mitzrayim to stay behind. So what happens is, and they're all to the west. I mean, they're moving easterly. So they're all to the west of the Yam Suf. An easterly wind blows that section of the Yam Suf that the Jewish people will walk through. It blows it westwards. That means that it's blown in the direction incoming to the Jewish people and everyone that's behind them. What that means is part of the sea was placed on the sea banks. It was moved towards what was beforehand dry land. That is why Vayolech Hashem transports that part of the sea. With an easterly wind, he moves it westwards. Vayosem, he placed es hayom lecharova. That's not a reference to the seabed drying out. That's a reference to placing some of the sea onto actual dry land. The only thing is, But if it's if this come this portion of the sea comes towards them, then why doesn't it just engulf them and drown them as it moves over them? The answer is, when Hashem placed the sea on dry land, as it moved out westwards, Vayibaku Hamayim, the waters split. That means as this portion of the sea moved towards the Jewish people that were about to enter it, it split as it came onto dry land, which means that it ended up being on either side of all of these groups, yet on dry land. That's why it first mentions the moving of the sea before the splitting, because it was moved westwards and then split as it moved westwards. So everyone is in a rather interesting position now. There's an entire section of the Yam Suf that's empty now, because the water that formerly occupied it is actually on either side of them while they're on the seashore. Interestingly, we say in Tehillim, Legoze Yam Suf Ligzarim, which literally means Hashem tore the Yam Suf into strips, which with the normal understanding of Kriyas Yam Suf, there weren't really any strips. There was a sea that was split in half. Those two halves are not strips. They're two halves of a sea. But according to the Maasei Hashem, actually there was a strip of sea, which was the span of the Jewish people, that was then torn in half itself. That's Legoze Yam Suf Ligzarim, on either side of them. And so, it turns out that there are two chidushim, we may say. Number one, in the middle of the sea, there's a strip of dry land. That's the first chidush. The second chidush is, on dry land, there is actually two strips of sea. And that is referred to in the references in Pasuk Kaf Beis and Pasuk Kaf Tes. Pasuk Kaf Beis, the earlier Pasuk, which is the Jewish people as they first enter. So it says, Vayavo b'nei Yisrael b'so chayam b'yabasha. The second Pasuk later on says, b'yabasha b'so chayam. Why does it reverse them? The answer is because they're at different stages. As they first begin to move forward, so they're in a very interesting situation, because they are b'so chayam, in the middle of the sea, b'yabasha, while they are yet on dry land. That's even before they start moving, because they're surrounded by two strips of sea. So they are b'so chayam while they are yet b'yabasha. That's when they begin to move. The later pasuk, when they're already moving through the Yam Suf itself, it's reversed. Because the chiddush is no longer that they're in the middle of the sea while they're on yet and dry land, but rather the opposite. They're now on dry land while they're actually in the middle of the sea. And that's why pasuk kaftes phrases b'yabasha b'so chayam. So says the Afike Yehuda, who's also in league with the Maasei Hashem here. Okay, so all of these psukim now are completely taken on a new dimension. And now the pursuit, as the Jewish people move forward, Pasuk Kaf Gimel. Vayudafu Mitzrayim vayavo achareim. So all of Egypt pursues after them, but they don't all make it to the middle of the sea. Kol sus paro richbo paroshav el tochayam. It's Paro's horses and his cavalry and his army, they're the ones that actually make it into the sea. Everyone else is in pursuit, but they're not in the sea. Now, until this point, everyone's in complete darkness. No one knows what's happening. But at this point, as the Pasuk describes, Hashem enlightens everyone, illuminates the scene, and everyone realizes exactly where they are. They realize they're surrounded by water. No one knows what's happening. Chel Paro is surrounded by water because they're in the Yam Suf. Mitzrayim is surrounded by water because the Yam Suf has actually come out to surround them on either side. And this brings us to the returning of the water, which will also take the form of two stages. And the reason why is because there are two groups of people that need to be affected by the returning of the water. Let's see Pasuk Kafvav. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Neteyes Yodcha al Hayam. Stretch out your hand. V'yashuvu Hamayim al Mitzrayim. The water will come over Mitzrayim. And what that means is, as we mentioned before, Mitzrayim are by the banks of the Yam Suf. They haven't entered in. Because most of them shouldn't really end up there, but some of them should. The question is, how is that to be accomplished? Well, the answer, says Ma'aseh Hashem, is that there's currently sea on either side of them. The way that the water will come back is that it will close in and wash over the Mitzrayim, and those Mitzrayim that should end up in the Yam Suf will then be washed into the Yam Suf as this water returns. The water that so far has been on either side of them will actually close in on them and bring them in. And that's why it says, V'yashuvu ha-mayim ha-Mitzrayim, the water will now close in on Mitzrayim. Well, and then Pasuk Kav Zayin, V'yayt Moshe es yado al ha-yam, Moshe stretches out his hand, V'yashav ha-yam lefnos boker le'isano, and then the water returns in the morning to its original shape, because it's not in its normal shape at all. Some of it's actually off location. U'Mitzrayim nasin nekraso, Mitzrayim are running all over the place. Vayina'er Hashem is Mitzrayim besoch hayam. Hashem then shakes Mitzrayim into the sea, because the water washes over them, shaking some of them into the Yam Suf. That's Mitzrayim. And then, of course, when the water comes back into the Yam Suf, which is stage two, it covers over the group that's in there, which is Chel Paro. And that's described in Pasuk Kavches. Vayashuvu hamayim, vayichasu es harechev es haparashim, lechol chel paro habar machayim bayam, lo nishav im adachat. From them, no one was left. That's true of chel paro. Moreover, we see now that those that drowned in the Yam Suf were chel paro entirely, and a selection of the Egyptians. Let's come back to our pasuk in Az Yashir, where we started, which says, had two phrases. Number one, Markavos Paro v'chelo yaravayam. Paro's chariots, his army, thrown into the sea. 100%, completely. U'mivchar shalishav. And the word mivchar from the word bocher literally means a selection. A selection of his officers were also drowned in the Yam Suf. And the reason why it's referred to twice is because these were really two separate dynamics. The Chel Paro was in the Yam Suf, covered over. Mivchar Shalishav were the ones that were washed into the sea when the waters came back over them. And says Malbim in a masterful stroke. The word Yam Suf, or the term Yam Suf, we translate as the Red Sea. It's really the Reed Sea. Suf are reeds. And it's called, or was called, the Yam Suf, because there were reeds by the bank. In the middle of the sea, it just looks like any other sea. At the bank, that's where the reeds are, and that's where it gets its name from. And therefore, says Malbim, we noted that the Pasuk only refers to it as Yam Suf by its full name in the second phrase. The first phrase just calls it Yam. And that seemed to us slightly counterintuitive, because first say what everything there is to say, and then you can have more general references. How come the first phrase said Yam and the second Yam Suf? The answer is, says Malbim, because the first group that were covered over, Markavos Paravachelo, they were already in the middle of the Yam Suf, which means the water that covered them over was just, it looked like in water like any other sea. In the middle of the Yam Suf, it just looks like the sea. That's where they were. Mivchar Shalishav, those that were washed in from the banks, so they were washed in much closer to the banks. But closer to the banks is where the Suf is. And that's why it's only with regards to the second expression we find, the second group, we find Yam Suf. And Acharei Hadvarim Ha'ele, if we now come to our references in Tefillah. We say, for example, in the morning, and we noted that we refer to the drowning of the Egyptians twice. We say, firstly, V'zeidim Tibata, and then we say, V'yichasu mayim sereim, echad mayim lo nosar, but drowning is being covered by water, it's the same. But based on the Ma'aseh Hashem, we can understand that Zeidim, which refer to the wanton ones, Zaydim, like we say, Zaydim Yados Keter Asecha, those were those from amongst the Mitzrayim that were particularly Zaydim, particularly pernicious and evil. Those Zaydim were drowned. Not all of them, but the Zaydim among them. But the other group is, of course, Chel Paro, Bayechasu Mayim Sareim. Of them we say, Echad Mehem Lo Nosar. So So those are the double reference in the morning. And then the tziv and the hamek davar refers to the double reference in the evening, where we say mave bana begins the yamsuf esrod fehem veson ehem besomos tiba. Their pursuers and their haters. And again, aren't they one and the same? They're not one and the same. Rod Feim was those that were immediately pursuing them, immediately behind them, which is Chel Paro. And Son Ahem is those amongst the Egyptians that hated them. They are the Zaydim that we refer to in the morning. So between the two of them, Rod Feim completely as a group, and Son Ahem selected from the larger group of Mitzrayim. And perhaps, once we understand that most of Egypt, according to the Masi Hashem, and did not drown in the Yamsuf, they were there to witness it, perhaps we can return to the order of the Bris Ben HaBesarim, which is where, again, we began. That it states, V'avodim inosam, V'gamis hagoy ashe avodu don anochi, the nation will be judged, that is to say, punished, V'acherichen yetzu b'chush gadol. And our question was, well, if the gold and silver that we left Mitzrayim on day one is the Rechush Gadol, and some say that it is, it sounds like we're leaving Rechush Gadol before Dan Anochi is finished. Yet perhaps, based on the Masi Hashem, we can say that the Pasuk says, V'gam es hagoy asher yavod Dan Anochi. That means that Hashem will punish the people. That refers to punishments that accrued to the Egypt as a people in its entirety. That had finished by this stage, because all the Eser Makos, which applied to all of the Egyptians, that's done. It's true that Kriyas Yamsuf hadn't happened, but Kriyas Yamsuf wasn't for the entire Egyptian people. It was for Chel Paro, which is a small group, and for the selection of Mitzrayim. But the Din of the Goy had finished even before Kriyas Yamsuf, with Makos Bechoros, and the Rechush Gadol indeed happened subsequent to that, because Kriyas Yamsuf is not part of the Goy, the Din for the Goy, but rather sections of that nation. So, it's not the lightest of discussions, but I believe that we leave with Rechush Gadol. If we see, firstly, the questions, so many different types of questions in the Siddur and in the Chumash and in Az Yashir and in the order and in the repetition and the phraseology, etc. And here comes the Masi Hashem, and those that come lift up his coattails and go with him. And it's a real tour de force of Parshanut. For me, Kriyas Yamsuf will never look the same. And that's, I think, enough for this evening. We'll leave it over there for now.